Hare Baba, Hare Baba, Hare Baba, Hare Jai Om Vishnu Bhava Mahamdra Bhakacharya Sisi Manita Vangrish Hiskan Found the Chad A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sri Rupa Adki Jai Om Vishnu Bhava Mahamdra Bhakacharya Sisi Manita Vangrish Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Sirasati Dukumar Adki Sri Nama Chad Haridasa Korki Rem Sehot Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunita Nanda Sri Vedaita Zirhasi Vasidhi Go Bhakti Vindiki Sri Sri Radha Krishna Samus Unuarakuni Giri Govardhanaki Vrindavan Dham ki, Mathura Dham ki, Navadvip Dham ki, Jamuna Mai ki, Ganga Mahai ki, Tulasi Devi ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Samaveda Bhakti Vinda ki. All glories to the Assembly of Devotees. All glories to the Assembly of Devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. So, I think there's a few people who perhaps were not here. Yesterday. So, thank you. Thank you very much. A few people were not here yesterday. Normally we would not let you come to join us at this point. But I'm sure there's many reasons why some people may have come and not been able to come yesterday. The reason is because this is not just a course. We are revealing our minds and our hearts. And we want to be in a safe atmosphere, a safe place. And so some of you have already begun to look at some issues in your life, some serious situations, occurrences, events. It makes it a lot easier, the same people we're sharing, so that we're all growing in this transformation experience. But if you're coming today, it's on you to try to get filled in with what we discussed yesterday. As we go on, you'll pick up on most of the things. Some of you are expressing the need for confidentiality. We can understand that. I have different ways of looking at that. In one sense, we ultimately want to create a culture where we feel, we say what we mean what we say, we can express whatever we feel, realizing that we're around people who love us, who care about us, who support us, who are concerned about our highest well-being. We want to be concerned about others' highest well-being. We want them also to be the same toward us. That is, of course, the goal, and that is idealistic. But if we do not move toward that goal, we'll never attain it. At the same time, because people are sharing things that's very dear to them, as we go on each day, we'll see how dear it is to some of you. As you begin to hopefully release and let go some things that are not so healthy. Now, this is not such an easy arrangement. We just finished lunch. It's hot as anything. There's no microphone. And also, the chairs are a little comfortable. So, so we'll try to find some way for 3 hours almost to keep each other enlivened. And if I see that the energy needs to be shifted, I'll find some way to help us to shift our bodies a little bit also. So, what I want to do is first is read something for about 5 minutes. And then we're going to go right into our assignment and some interactive activities. Just to get us started with our minds focused a little bit more on some things in relationship to Shama or forgiveness that's offered to us in some of the writings. First, let me do the next. Oh, no, let me read something. Dipin Bar gave me something really nice this morning from the Jaya Dharma. So far, can everybody hear me? It's not so easy. Those in the back, are you able to hear? Yeah. All right. If you can, at some point, just raise your hand, and I'll understand that I need to shout. This is from the Jaya Dharma. The tenderness of the heart experienced toward Krishna is known as bhakti. All other jivas are servants of Krishna, and tenderness of the heart toward them is compassion, daya. Therefore, compassion is included in bhakti. Forgiveness, shama, is the bhav situated between humility and compassion. I am so wretched and insignificant myself, so how can I inflict punishment upon others? When the attitude combines with compassion, forgiveness appears automatically. Forgiveness is included within bhakti. Here's a passage from the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 21, also on shama, on forgiveness. A person can tolerate all kinds of offenses from the opposite party. This is known to be forgiving. Lord Krishna Krishna's forgiving quality is described in the Sishupal Vadha in connection with his forbidding the killing of Sishupal. King Sishupal was a monarch of the Seti kingdom, and although he happened to be a cousin of Krishna, he was what? He was always envious of him. Whenever they would meet, Sishupal would try to insult Krishna. Maybe some of you will have that most significant person you're trying to forgive, who's hurt you the most, is someone who sometimes seems to go overboard in trying to cause you problems. Whenever they would meet, he would insult him. He would call him ill names as much as possible. In the arena of the Rajasuya sacrifice of Maharaj Yudhisthira, when Sisupal began to call Lord Krishna ill names, Krishna did not care, and he remained silent. Some of the people at the arena were prepared to kill Sisupal, but Krishna restricted them. He was so forgiving. It is said that when there is a thundering sound in the clouds, the mighty lion immediately replies with his thundering roar. But the lion doesn't care when all the foolish jackals begin to make their less important sounds. So, in this story, we see, where's our little code list here? We see that Krishna did not give up anger because he didn't express anger. He was not resentful, and we can understand that he was somehow overlooking the bad. Here's a conversation, a room conversation with Srila Prabhupada and with a gentleman named Richard Webster. Within the Christian religion, there's a strong emphasis on possible failure and forgiveness. Prabhupada, no, forgiveness is, I know that in church the confession program is there, Prabhupada speaking. So you can forgive me once, twice, thrice, no more than that. You cannot make it a profession that you go on committing sins and God will forgive you. So we know one of the offenses in the holy name, chanting the holy name, the seventh offense, is to commit offenses on the strength of chanting the holy name. So we see that it's not that we're just going to denial or forgiveness is just blanket, but there's a science also to forgiveness. Bhagavad Gita 136 in the purport, because of them, Arjuna thought he should not take the severe steps necessary against ordinary aggressors. Besides that, saintly persons are advised to forgive. Such injunctions for saintly persons are more important than any political emergency. Arjuna considered that rather than kill his own kinsmen for political reasons, it would be better to forgive them on grounds of religion and saintly behavior. Bhagavatam 1927 purport, as far as salvation is concerned, one has to conquer the principle of lust, anger, unlawful desires, avarice, and bewilderment. To get freedom from anger, one should learn how to forgive. To be free from unlawful desires, one should not make plans. That is plans of revenge. By spiritual culture, one is able to conquer sleep. By tolerance, one can conquer desires, avaricious, and then Prabhupada goes on by conquering other things. One or two last ones. The word titiksham, or tolerance, indicates that a transcendent, this is from Bhagavad Gita 339, from Avritam Janam Etinena Janima Nyacha Varina Kama Rupena Kanteya Dushparena Nale Nacha. Let me read the translation. Thus a man's pure consciousness, or woman, is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and burns like fire. Therefore, the word tapa or austerity in this verse indicates that one must remain in his prescribed duty, not become impatient or unregulated due to the ways of lust, anger, and greed. The word tatiksham or tolerance indicates that a transcendentalist must be forgiving. Not should, possibly, but must. The material world is full of embarrassing and irritating situations. And unless one is inclined to be very much forgiving, he will become infected by a vindictive mentality which spoils one's spiritual consciousness. Bhagavatam 11.3.24. To serve the spiritual translation. To serve the spiritual master, the disciple should learn cleanliness, austerity, tolerance, silence, study of Vedic knowledge, simplicity, celibacy, nonviolence, and equanimity. And in the face of material realities, such as heat and cold, happiness and distress. The Krishna says one who's dear to him is unaffected by such. He doesn't say that one does not experience such attacks, one is not confronted with such, but he's saying how such a person who's dear, he processes things in a particular way. Let me read this last one. This is from a morning walk, March 5th, 1976, here in Mayapur. Prabhupada is speaking. Prabhupada says, all right, let them send. Then there's a break. It's compared with a rose flower without flavor. Man without education is compared with a coal. This is a word for cuckoo bird. Kolila nam swara rupam. The bird, cuckoo, is cooking. He sounds sweet. Any woman's beauty is how she is chaste and devoted to her husband. That is a beauty, not personal beauty. Vijam rupam ku rupanam. An education is the beauty for the brain. And the beauty for the cuckoo is his sweet voice. Shama rupam tashpavina. And those who are saintly persons, they should be simply forgiving. That is their beauty. Hamsaduta speaking. Forgiving, he's asking Prabhupada. Pusa Krishna asking also. Forgiving, Prabhupada says. Forgiving. Shama rupam tashpavinaha. Did Christ said that, Father, they did not know? Hamsaduta, yeah. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. Forgive them, for they know not. Prabhupada, just see how much forgiving. This is saintly characteristic. They're killing and still forgiving. Shamam Rupam Tashvinaha. Christ is very dear, ideal character. But these Christians, they have denied him, they have degraded him. Then we read yesterday about the duty of a Brahmin, the culture of forgiveness. I read it once more. The duty of a Brahmin is to culture the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating the sun. Supreme Personality of Godhead, how he is pleased with those who are forgiving. And the last part of that purport, thus everyone becomes beautiful by his special qualities. And the special quality of the Brahmana is described here is forgiveness. So, let's jump into our work today. We have a bunch of angry people here. People who are ready to forgive everybody. Huh? Want us to forgive everybody? Go around, forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you. Forgive you also, I forgive you. But we also have to learn how to forgive ourselves. So part of our discussion today is going to touch upon forgiving ourselves as well. We want to have two of the devotees, two of the groups, to be able to share their particular story regards to forgiveness. Yesterday we tried to divide, it was about 60 of you. We tried to divide as much as possible in pairs so that you would have a particular character, particular personality that you would look at and share with us something in regards to something special about how they experience some assault, some attack, some abuse, some exploitation, but they were forgiving. Now I can call on you, I can ask for volunteers, or maybe what I'll do is just call the particular personality we want to address, or the particular character in the Shastra, and then the two of you who have that, you decide which of you is going to briefly share with us something about the essence of this particular person in relationship to a pastime of forgiveness. So first, the two devotees who had the Avanti Brahmana, raise your hand. All right, so which of you are going to share? You sure? Okay, so you have to stand up and speak loud. You have with him also? Mm-hmm.
We'll take that. Okay. We were always coming here.
I'm bumping it? Okay.
You heard.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear him? So you're going to have to speak loud.
Yeah, okay.
Speak to them.
The narration out of Srimad Bhagavatam 11.
We can turn the fans off, but it's going to be hotter. We won't be able to. Part of this particular pastime, we look. Was there an overlooking of the bad? The bad was noticed, but there was a focus on the good. Did, in fact, there was no resentment or anger surfacing at all? In a particular case, did the person take responsibility themselves for what happened? Something similar? Did they accept the fate? And not only take responsibility, but just turn it over to Krishna. Some of these are sort of similar. This one, a well-wisher. Did the person, in spite of what happened, did they wish well upon the one who disappointed them? And did they even go out of their way to assist the person in their own advancement? And then the last one, in the process of assisting the person, did they also influence the offender, change the person's consciousness by their preaching, speaking, as well as by their actions? So some cases will be very distinct. Some of these are jumping out more than in other cases. What we're looking at is that these are some of the particular qualities, characteristics, when someone is genuinely being able to forgive. And the opposite of that, of course, is holding on. So let's see about this case of the Avanti Brahmana.
Speaks about the Brahmana in Avanikipura, who was a merchant, and he said he was like very greedy, not even considering like the dharma, artha, karma, and moksha, just working so much, just getting more and more riches for himself. And while doing this, he was not really caring for his family, for his people who were employed. So more and more they were agitated by his behavior and started treating him also very disrespectful. So at one point they started to reject him. He also had some agricultural crops who didn't come out. And so by guessing, his whole riches and wealth were lost. So first of all, he was very disturbed by this and by his family rejecting him, and he was crying, he was so sad, like, which you can also, it's like another way of being angry, and like, just totally disturbed. It's a great feeling of detachment. So by this he started to give up his anger and his frustration into this incident. And he started to could understand that all this so-called bad which happened to him was the mercy of Krishna to help to renounce again, so he could see the good. So he took up the order of sannyas and started to travel around the country. And by his traveling, it said he was harassed by many people, stealing some of his few possessions he had. Or one extreme example is that he was about to take his prasadam and one person came to urinate in his prasadam. And then he's called, it's a song of the Avanti Brahmana, and then he's describing how all these things happen due to one's own past bad misdeeds. And it showed that he didn't even get angry at it anymore. So like that's just the third step. And also saying that all our sufferings we experience in this world are just due to identification with the material body. This identification takes place in the mind. And also he took responsibility for it, seeing that it is due to his own karma he's having this. And also by knowing that he's eternal part and parcel of Krishna, he also took faith, he accepted his faith and took responsibility for it. So at a certain point when he was very absorbed in his transcendental knowledge of not being the body, being an eternal servant of Krishna, it wasn't a question anymore for him to forgive. He didn't even get angry, just tolerating it, knowing it is karma, it's just touching my body, I'm a spirit soul, eternal servant of Krishna, so it's not really touching me. And so as far as I understood the narration, he just came to that point, the next few steps were not really prominent in that narration.
Good. Vaishnava Gorgi! So now we're bringing up these personalities because we want to look close at how to think, how to react. We want to understand what are the qualities of the unalloyed devotees of the Lord. Where are we lacking? What are their experiences? So that we can be clear of what this royal process of bhakti can entail. Now this story is so important that when one takes sannyasana line, this is a major meditation and focus that one picks up and lives with, because it's so much emphasizing how the individual should just be ready to accept what Krishna arranges and to look at it in such a way of not being distracted by it, not being destroyed by it, not becoming depressed, and not reacting in an unhealthy way. So some of the areas we saw was, first there was some anger, and that was given up. Temporarily, bewilderment. And then from the jiva or bewilderment, I'm sorry, anger, then we can see some traces of taking responsibility. TR number 4 here. Also, our AF accepted the fate and relied on Krishna. So pretty prominent, and you can check and see it in your own notes if you picked up these primarily. Gave up anger. There was an unhealthy response at first, disturbance, because it was quite overwhelming what happened. But he maintained some balance, took responsibility, and then accepted the fate of Krishna. And even though he gave up the anger, it wasn't that things stopped. People were still assaulting him, and he was saying, even urinating his food, they would throw rocks, stones at him, make fun of him. But he accepted this fate of, accepted this. And because of such, he became unaffected by the environment. So as we are hearing these stories these few days, we also want to be praying, trying to connect with these great personalities. Praying in our own way, asking for strength to be able to, to be resilient, strength to be able to process things in a healthy fashion. And also to have more determination and perseverance to be able to drop or to give up anything that is unnecessary for our spiritual growth and acceleration. Next group, the devotees who have the story of Lord Chaitanya and Ramachandra Puri. Are they here? So devotees, okay. Can you come up? He's coming now. So you just summarize the essence of that and let us again, think about how shama or forgiveness is so important in our lives as Vaishnavas. Okay?
So, Ramachandra Puri was a disciple of Madhavendra, and then Madhavendra Puri was seriously, and then When Ramachandra Puri came to Chaitanya, visit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he saw some ants crawling on the moon, and he told Ananda Mishra to make Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was feasting in the house, he was laying down everywhere, and he was making so many rumors. And then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard about this, he told his devotees that he is going to reduce his amount of preaching to 1/4. And then all the devotees, they were all getting sad, and then they were all very angry on Ramachandra Puri. And then, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he still wasn't well mad with Ramachandra Puri, although his devotees, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees were mad with him. And afterwards, when the devotees get tried to tell Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he is Ramachandra Puri is always like this, he is always trying to criticize the devotees, so he should not bother him. And then, but still, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is like, no, my brother's Bhagavad, so I respect him, so he should respect him. But then, after some time, when Ramachandra Puri left Jagannath Puri, but then all the devotees, they were really happy. They felt like a big burden from their head, and so they felt very long relief. And then after Ramachandra Puri left, Jagannath Puri, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again started to eat normally, like normal how it used to be before.
Jahiro! Okay. What? Let's turn the fans on now. Turn the fans on. We'll all be on the floor in a minute. Say, one Swami down. Tomorrow, please try to have us two microphones, okay? I need a microphone. We want to have a microphone that can pass around also. Which of our forgiving codes do we find present in this story? Okay. Overlooked the bad and saw the good. No resentment? Okay. Any others? Accepted responsibility? Took responsibility? So here's God himself, who could smash anything, anybody. But we see also great mercy coming forth in such a way. Now, what do you want to do? I think that's all enough for the stories right now. Tomorrow we'll take more, so we can have the fan on also. What we want to do now is we want to do some conversion here. Let's see. This is our list. Of some of the things we experience when there is emotional hurt. What would you like to do, Divyambar? If you can be our scribe here. Now, all of these are things that distract from our loving nature. They give us pain, and sometimes they cause us to give others pain also. Just like, for instance, if you're carrying around some hurt, say you have a mother, and you're carrying around some serious emotional hurt, then it means you're constantly cheating your children because you're not able to give them your full support, attention, love because of that dysfunctional aspect that you're having to struggle and deal with. And what to say if you are having this number one, revenge, it takes a lot of energy, a lot of mind focus and thinking about how to get back at someone. Some people have, you know, others they see as an enemy who have disappointed them, and they put so much of their powerful mental mindset, mind culture, and just thinking about what they can do to the person, what they would like to see happen to the person, what they hope could perhaps take place. And so they're adding to the pollution in the Mother Bhumi. They're polluting their own system, and they will be disturbed physically, psychologically, and most important, they'll be disturbed spiritually. But what we want to do now is, looking at this list that you compiled yesterday, we want to take each of these areas and see how to transform it into something positive. Here are 12 areas of emotional hurt. And we want to see, given that something has happened to you or someone else, and this is the first way that you're dealing with it, based on these words, which give us some understanding of an emotion. Let us see how this same thing can be turned into something positive. Okay, so here, for example, one has been hurt, and they have been thinking about revenge. How to get back at this person. What is a way to think of this same interaction, using this word as a catalyst, that can help us to turn it into something positive? Instead of the revenge, what's another emotion that could be elicited that could turn this into something positive? You put number one. I think all you have to do, instead of putting the actual word, because we'll keep this here, just put only the number, and we'll put what they give us. Okay, first? Okay. Reveal mine. So, one way she's saying we can turn this into something positive is, instead of secretively or surreptitiously thinking of how we're going to get back, how we're going to hurt, how we're going to destroy, how we're going to embarrass that person, we can openly go and address the person and reveal our particular concern. So an incident has happened, and so now we can use that, instead of going inward, hurting ourselves, and maybe later hurting the person, we can let that be a catalyst to help us to now extend some communication. Let's take number two. So number one, we put, she has revealed mine.
Can we ask questions?
Yes. Yes.
What if the person doesn't accept?
Okay, what we'll do, because I see this can open up for every question, each one. We'll go through this, and then we'll come back and we'll take questions if we look at something positive. Because one thing may also stimulate something else. So to try to keep that in mind, because it's an important question. We will file that. Disappointment. This runs through practically any emotional hurt. We feel disappointed. How can we convert that into something positive? Disappointment. Is there a way to... Yes. Okay. We can try to see some good. This is what we have here. Obi, overlook the bad, trying to see good. We had to put a little extra energy into that and trying to find the good to give more attention to flame that. Just as we know, for instance, so often people have very good qualities and sometimes they have some obnoxious qualities. And there are times when we can feel better about that person by just giving more attention to their good qualities. And there are times that we can even help that person to become less involved in bad qualities by rewarding the good. Sometimes we can be very watchful and noticing that is improper, and if we look at each other long enough, we'll surely find all kinds of stuff. But there are also times we can create a better sadhachara, or a healthier character, by being able to go searching for that is good and rewarding that. You see this in parenting. You know, you can call your child out. You moron. You imbecile. Idiot. How can you do that? There you go again. Doing such ridiculous things. And in one sense, you have programmed the child. I'm a moron. I'm an idiot. I'm ridiculous. Therefore, I should do idiotic things. Or the child has done something that is imbecilic, that does represent the quality of a moron. But you address the child, oh, my beloved, I know you can do so much better because in the past you have done so many wonderful things. And so you are focusing now more on the good so that you can be able to nourish the good, so that the good becomes so prominent that it begins to eradicate or replace the bad. So sometimes in the disappointment, it's genuine, and we'll talk a little bit more about why we have to be able to really deface it. See, to release something means not to ignore it. It means that you focus on it, and then you process it in such a way that you can be freed. If we don't accept it, and we won't be able to process it unless we accept it. And then we'll be in denial. Like some people go around and feel nobody, it can hurt them, can bother them, they just see everybody as good. And they smile all the time, and they get cancer because they're holding all kinds of things in, and it's eating out at them. Three, separation. What's the way? Sophia said that when you feel emotionally hurt, that it causes you to experience some separation or some alienation, because the tendency is that when someone hurts you, you want to get away from them, or what they have done cause you to feel that they're not there for you, and you feel separate in such a way. So if you feel, if separation is there through emotional hurt, what is the way to turn this into something that is positive? So someone has hurt you, and you thought you were together with them, and now from what they have said, what they have done, has shown separation. What's the way how to benefit? So she's, maybe you can hear in the back, she said you can do something nice for them. You can give them a present. Sometimes people are very clever, they do this. Somebody is out for you, really want to hurt you, huh? And you just kill that person with kindness. They're trying so hard to cause you to become bewildered, disturbed, and instead you are very kind. Often they can feel extremely foolish, or it can cause them to look closer at themselves and to learn and to grow from the way that you have responded. But most important is that it can help you, because instead of you now accepting whatever they threw or did to you, you're not accepting it. And you are protecting and creating a block from further disturbance by you giving them some kindness. And by giving some kindness, it's also like you are putting forth a force field or an environment of protection, of love, of positivism, so that such negative things will not come so close to you. This applies what happens when someone is trying to come with negativity, and you are remaining fixed and centered with positive, loving concern. Because many times, people who consider you their enemy, they may not even be so much thinking about winning. They just want to see you disturbed. You know, there's some people who don't care about fighting. They don't care that they're going to lose something as long as they make sure that you lose in the process. There's so much in the mode of ignorance. They just want to see you somehow hurt, stopped, weakened. So sometimes it can even happen in our Vaishnava communities. Somebody is losing faith. Somebody has gotten all kind of weeds and anarchists in their life. They become envious or disturbed because you are doing nicely. And so even though they know something is wrong, they don't mind so much doing it themselves. They just want to involve you because they want somehow to bring you down. Or they want to get you occupied, I'm sorry, preoccupied. This happens in litigation also. Many times, someone knows they can't win, but they have money and they want to keep the other person disturbed from being able to do whatever they're trying to do. And so they go into the process of jeopardizing some of their own well-being because they don't care, just to get someone else distracted or caught up. Anyway, that is some of Vajrayana's course in conflict resolution. She talks many things about conflicts. Loss of confidence. This is a big one that happens. He said, the ones who can hurt you the most is those who you're ready to give the most to, reveal the most to, that you share the most with, and when they disappoint you, it can cause you to distinctly lose confidence in them. Sometimes it can cause you to lose confidence in people in general, or in whatever they represent, authority or lovers. Just like one devotee was sharing yesterday, Nirmala, how he was having some hurt from trying to give his heart. And early romance can be very, traumatic, huh? One is beginning to give their heart, open up their heart. And so many, many people, because their first connection in romance, first time they're trying to give themselves in their minds, their heart, they get disappointed. Many, many people, they shut down for the rest of their life. Or they go on a revenge campaign, and in their relationships, they're trying to get back at that person who hurt them in some way. So here is a loss of confidence. How do we turn that into something positive? Someone you have invested trust in, and they have abused your trust. How do you make that positive? Need a little help here. Yes? Okay, so she's saying, I'm sure you can hear in the back, that one way is to take advantage of this and to have some counseling. So something has happened, has given some emotional pain, some hurt, and now one takes advantage of trying to increase the understanding of relationship, of communication, about them, about others. And so they use it as something positive to go deeper into relationship concerns. You can think of many others for each of these. Number five, despair. This is kind of similar to disappointment. Let's go to the next one. This is, well, no, you give us one. Give us a quick one for despair. So there's some frustration here, some anxiety. Things didn't go the way you expected them to go. You're out of control here. But she knows how to really forgive. Okay. Okay. So one of the things in despair is always knowing that there are many people whose situation is much worse than your own. And to try to see how to help someone. This is one of the most, we're having our list here of best ways to learn. And remember, the last one is to teach. When there's a real, real serious issue in one's life, you have a real serious issue. Your issue is that you just overeat. Or your issue is that you just sleep too much. You're trying, but you can't get on without less than 10 and a half hours. Or your issue is that you are just always so fearful, or you are constantly feeling as a victim. And something very traumatic happened in your life. That you only had one son who looked just like you, who talked just like you, who was an image of yourself, and you were just thinking, yes, that's me, he's going to grow up and be just like this. And somehow, at 2 years old, he got hit by a car, and he died. He got hit by a drunken driver. So you can be in grief for the rest of your life that the little you was going to become a big you is no longer existing. But now you can live on with that and change it to something healthy by now creating a campaign, being a part of a movement, a situation that addresses the issue of drunken drivers. And so in this way, you have changed something that was quite despairing into something that allows you not to forget, but now to make it something that's positive by realizing that there's other people who had something similar and maybe even worse. And so it's a way now that you use this great hurt and pain so that it helps to improve on the quality of life for some other people. Because for you, you are not just sympathizing with that person, you're really empathizing because it's happened to you and you know the actual pain that's there. See, one of the reasons also, if we've had really heavy hurt and if somehow we can walk out of it, we can be that much more caring, that much more effective in being able to help someone else. Because really, it is not so easy to help somebody with a very, very deep problem if you're just understanding it only conceptually. People can often know when you're trying to help them and you really haven't been there. You really don't know the degree of their pain. Just take an example. An alcoholic or drug addict, one of the most prominent ways of how to help such a person is somebody who's been there and have recovered. Because when they are explaining something, when they're sharing something, the person who's now dealing with it appreciates that they understand the difficulties and the pain and the complexities in trying to become freed of that. Otherwise, you're talking to that drug addict, you're talking to the alcoholic, but in their mind, they're thinking, yes, you are a therapist, you are a spiritualist, you are this or that, but you don't really understand what I am actually going through. And therefore, whatever you're offering, I can't really accept it because it probably doesn't work anyway. But if the person has experienced it and they have moved away from it, then their sharing has so much more power to you because you realize that it's possible. Now, this is also important in our spiritual communities in general. Our entire society will move by leaps and bounds as we begin to see more people distinctly having a higher taste. Just as there was a time when we were just distributing a few small books. And then we had somebody distributing lots of books. And then all of a sudden, you find many people distributing books. Then we started distributing incense and candles and paintings. And at first, it was something that was practically unheard of. Or a few people were doing it, and it was just something on the sideline. But then others began to hear what's possible, and then before long, begins to spread and spread. So one of the also benefits of this kind of course is that if we've had very deep wounds and we're able to move away from that, then we'll be that much more profound in being able to understand somebody else's issue and to be able to provide some genuine help. Let's go on a little faster. Rejection. How do we turn rejection into something positive? You're trying to be someone's friend. You're trying to be an associate. You're trying to have good sadhu sangha vaishnava relationship, and somehow person rejected you. How do you deal with that? How do you turn that into something positive? prayers. There's no hard and fast way. There's so many different ways of addressing these things. Rejection. Let's get one more for this, because this is such a common one that hurts us, because we all want to be appreciated, valued, and we want affiliation. What's another thing positive you can do? You have been rejected by what someone has done or said. It's shown such. You feel this way. How do you turn that into something positive? You offer? So he's saying you still continue to offer your friendship. Okay, we can put, you offer a greater friendship of yourself. Betrayal. This is somewhat similar to losing the trust with someone because they have betrayed something you shared with them that was important to you, that was confidential. They have betrayed something that you have kept sacred, the two of you, and now it's in the open. How do you make this? How do you forgive somebody who's hurt you to such an extent? Yes. What is it again?
Benefit of the doubt.
All right. And do not chastise the person. Okay. So you give another chance. All right. You're giving all the answers how to deal with your issues. So remember your own medicine that you're giving out. Okay. Fear. So now something has happened, and we have shut down. We get all kinds of fears, all sorts of phobias here. What do we do with that? You made yourself a fool, and now you become very fearful. How do you change that to something positive? Okay, so be more selective. Okay, we got three more here. Depression. This is another one, like disappointment, that runs throughout all of this emotional hurt. I was sharing on the stage how we're talking about congregational preaching. And I was making a plea to the devotees to reach out more to help the world, to help people, because people are suffering so much. How of the ten diseases in the world, 10 top diseases that are disabling, causing people so much distress and problems, that depression is in now and is moving up the next 15 years to number 2. That half a billion people on the planet are dealing with mental problems. And a lot of it has to do with depression. And so this is an area that people are suffering so much. 1 million people commit suicide worldwide every year, but about 30 million try. So one issue then is people are suffering like anything. The commies are suffering. The mind bodies are suffering. The voters are suffering. The scholars are suffering. The smart brahmanas are suffering. The sahajiyas are suffering. The Vaishnavas are suffering. Woo! So much. So much suffering. Something has to be done. Fast. Stop the suffering. Some of you sitting here, suffering too much. So we need to do something. So suffering has so much to do with what the mind is processing, how the mind is codifying. Just think about that. Everything has to do with how we perceive, how we codify, what we accept. If you tell me, you say, Maharaj, your face is so ugly, it gives me pain when I look at it. I can say, no problem. Wait till you look at your face, but I finish you. Or I can say, oh, maybe I have my tilak on wrong. I should put my tilak on nicer. Or maybe I don't have any tilak. Or maybe I can look at it and think, well, Babu, thank you, because you just helped me to realize that this body is not a good bargain. But something can be said or done and you can interpret it in so many, many different ways. Hmm? Someone can tell you, Mataji, your sari is crooked. Your slip is showing. And you can get angry because you just spent so much for this sari, and you tried to tie up so nicely, and you can get angry at that person and thinking, you're just envious because you don't have a silk sari like mine. Or you can thank them for being so compassionate and personal of helping you to be able to look better and to present yourself in a nicer way as a Vaishnavi. So same thing has happened, but one person has taken it and now is experiencing distress, depression, separation, loss of confidence, despair, and even someone is holding revenge. So you have noticed me this time, wait till I see something wrong with you, and I'm going to show you how it feels to be called out. But it has so much to do with how the mind is functioning that determines what we're now going to engage in accepting or rejecting, the Tsongkhapa and Vikalpa. We take these last two, and we're going to open up a little discussion on this. Pride. How do we turn pride into something positive? Somebody has gotten hurt. It's an interesting one. Somebody has been hurt, and now they have pride. It's an interesting one. I have trouble processing that one. Give me a little help here. You get hurt, and then you feel proud. How is that? How does that happen? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So this is more of the hankara. So sometimes we have been pain, and the way we deal with coping skills with that is that we set up some barriers. We let the false ego create some boundaries, unhealthy boundaries. So a way to turn this into something positive is to do what? What do we do? Huh? What's the way? What's the opposite of pride? Yes. Be humble. You say, I deserve even worse. Huh? You think of the person who hurt you the most. And now you say, oh, I deserve even worse. Whew. We'll come back to that. Okay, anger. That goes along with revenge. Hmm? So, how do we change this anger to something positive? Anger is very powerful, you know. It's really exertive. Some energy is there. There's a focus.
Well, the Rosh says that actually anger, you cannot direct transform, but you can use it in Krishna consciousness.
So, what do we do?
For example, if somebody is more...
You get angry at Krishna?
Somebody is more angry, you can use this anger as a security guy.
You use the anger on somebody else? No. So you get disturbed at your job, then you come home and you get angry, and then you battle your wife. Mm-hmm. That's what you do, right? Mm-hmm. You say, you're my other half, and therefore you're to share, so I'm having this anger, so I dump it on you. Is that what you do? I surely hope not.
I have a case. The devotees were given gloves for boxing.
Okay, so he's saying that what you do when you get angry, go to the store, sports shop, and you buy some boxing gloves. And you say, go. Is that what you, that's what you do in Croatia? And I hope that. So, but there are therapies that say like this, though, that the way you deal with anger is that you express it. But if that philosophy is the case, we know that the swine would be most liberated because they're expressing everything. You can get rid of some emotion, but not really the real issue. But how do we turn, what's the way to look at anger in a positive way?
Ignoring it,
mm-hmm.
Laughing about
it. Ah, interesting. Laughing at it. Huh? So with the same amount of energy and attention, instead of being angry at what somebody said or did, angry about the circumstances and the occurrence, you can focus on it and you can laugh. You consider how you thought you were in control, or you can laugh by trying to find something in that situation that you can reflect on in a joyful mood. The last one here, somewhat similar, but frustration. What's the way how we take frustration that's very demoralizing, disempowering, and how do we turn that into something that's positive? You know, a lot of these things, not a lot, all of them, really. All of these, they zap your energy also. That when the mind goes into this space, you get really zapped from, it takes away from so many things that you can do, you can be, you can share. And so many people, they go on from day to day just being zapped like anything, not having a clue of what they can do. So I'm looking for. So, frustration, someone? Okay.
You become doubtful.
Become?
Doubtful.
Thoughtful. I'm sorry. Oh, that's good. So, become thoughtful, to introspect. Okay, now what we want to do with this one, 3, 4, let's put up here 5. Converting. Okay, then right at the top, put this right, changing hurt to positive. Okay, let's just take that, maybe put it on another board. Yeah, let's just push that all the way back for now. Yeah, that's good. Okay. So, Divine Body, let's put this one on over here. Now, I want you to start thinking a little bit here, which you're always doing. But we want to focus now, to shift gears for a second. We want to look at reasons why we often do not want to forgive. You can think of personal as well as general, but thinking of some of the reasons why we don't want to forgive people. Well, if you're always forgiving, you just start to think reasons why somebody else is not as forgiving as you, and don't forgive most of the time or some of the time. So we want to make a little list of up here of reasons why we do not, or why we can be very reluctant about forgiving somebody. In the back, Gopa. Okay. So number one, you're afraid of again being hurt. Otherwise, sometimes we're considering, if we forgive somebody, they're just going to do it again. Or they may feel that we were happy with what they did. So why should we forgive them? Huh? So fear of being hurt. We don't want to be hurt again. Okay. 2, self-pity. Some people, they really like to lament. You ask them, Prabhu, how are you doing? I'm glad you asked. My back is hurting. My neck is bothering me. My knees don't work good anymore. Huh? I've lost too much weight. I haven't eaten a good meal in a week. My children do not like me. My husband is a bum. Some people, they come together and they have pity parties. They get together. Sometimes the body do it also. They call somebody over to people at their house. And supposedly they're going to have pizza and ice cream. But it's time to a pity party. Bro, this isn't going right, you know. Temple commander, he did this. And temple president. And then we saw the GDC in 3 years. And everyone gets together and they just share. unfortunately, a lot of the self-help groups turn into this. Self-help groups can be very good initially, but then some people, their whole identity is based on being the child of alcoholic parents, or their whole identity is being a survivor of incest. And they come together once a week, once a month, and they check in. Here I am, the 10-year survivor of incest. Here I am, I've been dry now for 12 years. I'm dry for 13 years. So their identity is still so much based on that particular problem. And so sometimes we don't forgive because our identity has been based on this hurt. And we're afraid that if we let the hurt go, we won't have any identity. So we hold on to that hurt. Some people, they have trouble trying to heal, to be whole, because they don't know what it's like. They're afraid of having different relationships, thinking differently, because their friendship and their mind culture has all been based upon the constant internal dialogue about this hurt. That's another conversation we'll have in a couple of days about internal dialogue. So self-pity, number three. Let's give another one. Reason why people do not want to forgive.
Okay.
All right. Sometimes we are hungry for attention. And if we let go that particular occurrence, issue, problem that's impacted upon our lives, we'll lose being noticed. We'll lose the attention, the affection, the comfort that sometimes come when people are seeing us as a victim. So some people do not give up because they're hungry for attention. And they are not unaware of how to get the attention in a healthy way. Now, as we're sharing this, we want to look at the possibilities as we try to help somebody who has these problems and are stuck in this way, and we especially want to look at ourselves to see which of these we may be carrying.
Sometimes we justify that I am correct and the other party should begin the process.
Okay. Sometimes, let's say, self-righteousness. Sometimes we cannot forgive. We cannot forgive because everything is just egocentric. Everything is self-centered. The person disappointed us. We can only see things in that spectrum. Mm-hmm.
Real hatred.
Okay. Sometimes because of hatred. All right. We're blinded by the hate, so we can't forgive because forgiving means accepting compassion. Love, affection, we can't go into that space. Okay?
The underlying problem has been solved.
Okay. Problem is still existing. You can see these are some very significant and genuine and powerful reasons why it can be very hard to give up the hurt and to be able to forgive. Because forgiving means giving up these things. Mm-hmm. We forget that we did the same thing? Oh, we can't forgive ourselves. Okay. Okay. We can't forgive ourselves. That is a part of today's discussion. Forgiving ourselves. So many times, we cannot forgive because the issue is so much with ourselves. We're not able to forgive ourselves, release ourselves, and so therefore we project that on others. Mm-hmm. That's also very similar. Afraid of change. Most people are literally afraid of change. Be surprised how many people, maybe how many of you who are sitting here are not making more advancement because you're afraid of change. Are not being able to be greater pioneers because you're afraid of change. Are not ready to be a little more honest with others, with yourself, because it's a party that's afraid of change. Afraid of what the next chapter may bring. Should I have a few more? Yes. False ego. Big one to get around. False ego is there. It always causes us to perceive things in an unhealthy way. Mm-hmm. We've accepted the person is bad. And so whatever the person says, We aren't going to accept it. We aren't going to think good about him because we just think this person is bad, evil. Is a Maha Rakshasa. At least we should become empowered so if we kill them, they can go to the spiritual world, huh? Yes. She likes that. She's a revenge.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes someone who has been hurt too bad has become unable to feel in a positive way, to be sensitive to other people.
Okay. One thinks that you can put that. Let's see. One has been wounded so badly they become like a casualty. So they've been wounded to such an extent that it's hard for them to be able to get back. Okay, let's pass these out to everybody. Okay, you can have a seat for a little while. So while these are going around, so these are reasons why people have trouble trying to forgive. This will be our number 6. Huh? So some of what you've mentioned, you can just look up here for another 2 minutes. Reasons why we do not forgive. Some are personal, some are in general. Sometimes we experience one of these, sometimes a combination. Fear of being hurt again. Nobody wants to experience same thing by being vulnerable, and so sometimes we just shut down. Self-pity, at times when we have identified with such. And it's like this, where we're hungry for attention, and so our existence is based around that hurt. Self-righteousness, we can't forgive because we are thinking that we are so holy that how can anybody even consider doing something that's harmful to us? And so we can't in any way look and try to see things from a different perspective. Other times, we have imbibed so much anger from this hurt, that hatred is there. If there was a way that we could use some kind of machine, some sort of microscope, to see how much hurt cells we have in our body, some of you would be shocked. Especially some would think they're very peaceful. They'd be shocked to see how much that you're holding in, so much hurt and disappointment. Because in many cases, those who are very peaceful are even more sensitive. So therefore, you're even taking in even more what people say about you, think about you. Just consider, anybody who's in here who really has a serious problem in wondering what people think about them, and are very so often in the meditation of wondering how people are thinking about you, such person is extremely sensitive, and they can have a harder time in trying to forgive. Why? Because so much of their existence is that they want to look right. They want to appear to be right. They want others to think that they are right, even when they're wrong. And so there's so much image conscious that it becomes even more devastating when the image they want to prevail does not prevail. Problems still there. This is a real big one. How do you forgive somebody and you're supposed to change, but they haven't changed? How do you forgive somebody when the same thing that has assaulted or attacked you, the same problem, is there and maybe has gotten worse? Can't forgive ourselves. Afraid of change. Ego covering a higher self. Accepted that the person is just bad. Because the person is bad, how can we even consider any type of goodness or see the good and not the bad when there's no good to see? You think about it. Some of those hurt you the most. This is how you think about them. You think there's nothing good about that person. when you see their face, hear their name, see things associated with them, it just makes you angry. If any of you have that problem with someone, you're really allowing that person to assault you so many times over and over again. Badly wounded. We're wounded to that extent. We really need to be healed because we're killing ourselves. And we will hurt our spiritual life, and we will physically and emotionally give ourselves so much undue distress. What we have in front of us here is briefly 12 steps to forgiveness. So there's all kind of anonymous, huh? Alcoholic Anonymous, Overweight Anonymous, Drug Anonymous, Forgiveness Anonymous. First, clarify the needs for forgiveness. If we don't face whatever is going on, it will continue to go on in different ways. Some underlying thing is there that's causing us a big problem in our spiritual life or in our emotional setup. And if we just try to ignore it and consider just going to go away, it's not going to go away. If anything, it's going to surface in other ways. So a serious issue is recognizing how much you have been hurt by what has happened and recognizing who has been responsible for that. Sometimes we recognize the pain, but we don't look close enough to see where it's come from, and that can also be an issue of keeping it in a protracted way. So one of the first things is clarifying what is going on. I am what? I am feeling this is changing the hurt. I want the hurt. I am feeling disappointed. I'm feeling so much separation. I'm having loss of confidence in people and myself. I'm feeling rejected. This is so much of my mental reflection. I am constantly thinking that somebody else is going to betray me. There's all type of fear that's going on in my life. We have to look. Where is it coming from? And we look to see where and how and when did this start. And so at times we can hone in to look closer. So that's the first point. And so this brings us to two, which is sort of organic. We see, yes, this is what happened. And I was angry, disturbed, mad, disappointed. So I look at my legitimate frustration and anger. Now, as we have noticed where the weed is, then we can go and try to uproot it. If we ignore that the weed is there, if we ignore that the anarch is there, then where is the ability, strength, or desire, or attention to address and to bring it out? It will not be there. Four, assertiveness helps forgiveness. This one is so important. I'm going to make a special charge just for this. Let's do it real quick. There are about five ways. Let's give six. Six ways to handle any problem. All right. Take all your problems away. Six ways. We know the first three ways is that we have to be much more attentive to Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. Let's put that first. Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. This is an ongoing formula for us about anything. We still have to avoid being lazy. So that we honor healthy Sadhu Sangha. That we take advantage of good guru-disciple relationship. And that we are clothed in the Shastra. So we make that 1, 2, and 3. And then, no, just put Shastra 2. Just put a 2 here and a 3 here. Okay, our fourth way is assertiveness. Sometimes to deal with a problem, we need to act. Many times, something is not going anywhere or is not being resolved because we just won't act. Five is putting yourself in somebody else's shoes, somebody else's sandals. Someone else is moccasins. Putting yourself in someone else's shoes. And six is to disassociate. So what we're having here, first two and three we're quite familiar with, even though this is an ongoing process for the rest of our life, Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. And the more we are in healthy connection with such, the easier it is to eradicate any problem. Okay, put yourself in, disassociate. Assertiveness is that if we just go into denial, avoid, hope that something's going to go away, in most cases it won't. And so there are times when there's a need for us to be what? Prabhupada once told me to be humble, submissive, but brave. So there are times when we have to act, to try to be in the proper consciousness, but to address an issue, address a situation, to communicate, to make clear what our particular needs, our concern, in fact, is. Other times, we can gain entire different perspective that can help us to bring healthy conclusion and resolution by trying to put ourselves in somebody else's position. And we're going to spend some time on that, hopefully in a little while. That if we're only looking at how it is impacted upon us, how we see it, what we experience, that's only a small part of the issue, and that's also denying that Krishna is a controller. It's also denying that for some reason, Krishna has allowed this to be a part of your life space. And if he's allowed it, there's some things that you are supposed to, or we're supposed to learn from it for growth. There's something that can be there that we can use to become more Krishna conscious. Disassociate, sometimes the way to deal with hurt, pain, any type of problem, is that we have to step back. Many times, we're so close to what is going on, we're so much a part of it, that there's no question of bringing resolution, because by being so close in it, we'll not be able to see enough sufficient variables to be able to analyze, understand, to be able to see how to get out of it or how to use it for growth. So there are times we have to go outside of ourselves and to look at what is happening as if we're viewing some other person's doing whatever has happened to us or what was in the environment to get a different type of perspective. This, let's take this down because we're going to come back to this later. This is our number six, huh? Number seven. Let's just put somehow up there, Roman numeral 7. You still have your paper? Number 5, releasing excessive victim consciousness. That we talked about how people just have an identity based on that particular problem. And how their whole life is centered around that. Refraining from myopic judgments. Refraining from coming to isolated conclusions, to narrow speculations, narrow identifications. Let's see. Why don't we just put that one on this board over here? You see the board behind? No, this one, yes. Let's put it on the board behind. Number 7, managing your grief. This could be a whole course in itself. Because there are many stages and many aspects of grief. But one of the first things about grieving is to grieve. Huh? Let it all out. Boo! Anger, fear, frustration, tears. Let it out. The first is shock. You know, one goes into shock usually. Number 8. Confrontations and communications. This is some of you said about how to transform some of this. That sometimes you have to speak up to the person, or you have to go for counseling, or you have to clarify a little bit better what your area of interest is. 9, releasing the controls. Many times, our hurt really has to do with the fact that we're out of control. And so what happened caused us to realize that we were not controlling the person, the relationship, the situation. And so we become hurt, but really we're more angry than anything else. But if we're able to free ourselves from thinking that it has to happen the way we want it to happen, when we want it, how we want it, we can be able to be freed from the hurt. Defining your mission as a sadhu. Have to look closer. What really are the qualities of a sadhu? And do we genuinely want to be sadhus? Are we pretending? As we review these different cases of our acharyas and great personalities in the Shastra, we have to think, do we really want what they want? And if we do, are we ready to pay the price? Are we ready to do what's necessary to be able to attain it? And if we are, then we must follow their footsteps. Embracing humility. Again, something has happened based on what's going on in the ego. How we codify it then determines what our response is. Becoming an empowered agent. That all of these things, just like with the Avanti Brahman, they were devastating. And first he was angry, and then he gave up that anger, overlooked the bad, saw the good, accepted the fate, relied on Krishna, took responsibility. Coming out of that, he turned into a much more mature, powerful sadhu that had very deep, rich inner life. So the more the chaos was going on around him, the more it helped him to develop a deeper inner life. Now, we want to just stop here for a minute. And I think let's take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come to questions, because there were some questions on, let's see, what was it? Let's look at my sheets. Oh, we were turning these emotional hurts into good. That would be number 4. Yeah. I think there was, you were having a question about even a few other people. This was on this list. Remember which list it was? Or this one? This one? Okay. So, let's take a 4 or 5 minute break. Stretch, okay? And please keep these papers so you can consult it a little bit more later. Some ways of dealing with emotional hurt and forgiveness is something similar to dealing with conflict or relation issues. So all of these 12 points, we can also kind of summarize them into name it, face it, feel it, and release it. You name it to see what it's responsible, face it, confront it, feel it, so that you can grab hold to it and be able to release it. Now, our number 3, you notice, defining what forgiveness means to you. And you'll look at this a little later in your own way, reflect on it. But now we just go over this real quick. There are several misconceptions of what forgiveness is. We've heard many people protest forgiveness for various reasons. And you just gave me, you know, so many of your own reasons, you know, why we don't forgive. And that was, you know, number 2 here. All of these are some of the reasons. And you'll see some of these are similar to what we have written down here. Be sending a message that he or she can do the wrong and get away with it. This is what people's normal misconceptions are. 2, this would mean I have to bury my anger. Not necessarily. Because we're saying burying it doesn't allow you to grab it and to release it. If I forgive, it means the other person wins and I lose. 4, I guess I will have to put a smile on my face and pretend everything is all right. I feel that I'm being required to go soft on something that is severely wrong. 6, one more time, I have to play the good guy, the good role, while the bad guy just skips on their own way, huh? We know how that feels. We feel that we have to be the servant of the servant. We have to be humble. We have to be submissive. But what about other people? Four, forgiveness is not. It's not letting go of unhealthy forms of anger. There are sometimes that krodha is necessary and can be directed and can be used. We won't deal with that now. Two, allow others to continue to disrespect your needs and your boundaries. Forgiving doesn't mean that you allow people to connect with you on unhealthy boundaries or to deny healthy boundaries that you need to have in place. Doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean lying down and becoming a human doormat. As one of you said, so the people will do it again. Telling the wrongdoer that the past is no longer significant and everything is fine. Forgiving doesn't mean you have to forget. Somebody said, wow, if I was funny, said that one. It doesn't mean you have to forget. As a matter of fact, sometimes if you forget, then you hurt yourself even more. Because often you want to remember, you'll forgive, but you want to remember so you don't put yourself back in that space or allow the other person to enter into unhealthy boundaries that you trespass your boundaries. So it doesn't mean forgetting. Some cases, yes. But in other cases, it means definitely remembering, forgiving, but making sure that the same thing doesn't happen again. Agreeing to become best buddies with the wrongdoer. It doesn't mean that somebody has hurt you and now you're supposed to just become their very best friend. No. We know somebody in the mode of ignorance. We respect them, but we do not have to associate. And because we care about people, whether they're well-wishers, some cases, the best way to forgive is forgive and to separate yourself. Because we have this misconception about forgiveness, then we hold on where we don't forgive, and we maintain all this revenge and all this other stuff. Pretending to go back to the normal reactions as if nothing happened. Doesn't mean that. Something happened, and it has been a part of the relationship between you and that person. Now the question is, how are you going to use it for your well-being as well as the other person's well-being? Sometimes the best way to use it for the other person's well-being is to make sure that they don't offend you again. Because it will hurt them. Denying that you may still have to live with such pain caused by the wrongdoer. Now, number five, what forgiveness does mean is you will stop thinking of ways you want the person to suffer. When we have the revenge, we're thinking so many ways of how we like to see that person just suffer, be tortured. How much torture is necessary for us to let the person go? Huh? You have your will. Somebody hurt you, okay? Now you can have them tortured as much as you want. You think, okay, what do you want? You want their neck chopped off? Want them to be run over by a train 5 times? You want dirty dogs to attack them? Huh? All that's left is their ears? Huh? How much torture you want? Huh? You want to just beat them in the head with a brick? I mean, you have to ask yourself, how much torture can allow you to feel that this person has suffered enough. Now, you know, a Vaishnava cannot think like that, huh? So we have to look close. Are we thinking like Vaishnavas? And if we are, then certain mindsets are necessary. You will free yourself to focus on rewarding relationships and pursuits. You're not going to let that person cause you to have unhealthy relationships with other people. You will choose to live in the present. By not forgiving, we're constantly living in the past. You will choose to give up obsessions regarding the wrongdoer. Recognize that you have more important things to give your attention to. Every time you have to think of that wrongdoer, you're giving your power over to that person. You're giving the attention that can go for your beloveds, for the Lord, for Sadhu, for Guru. Now he's going thinking of that person. Five, you will refrain from ongoing temptation to insult the wrongdoer. You will let go of any illusions that you might somehow control the wrongdoer's life. That person has their karma. They have their, they're using their free will in certain ways. And we can't always control what's happening in other people's lives. We have to let them be responsible and accountable for what they're doing and move on with our life. You will let go of illusions. Okay, number 7. You will not allow someone else's maya to control your life. Just think, those persons who hurt us so much, we have allowed their maya to just impact upon our consciousness. You will give yourself permission to make life choices that will lead to contentment and not depression and not obsession. You will live each moment as an expression of love, not hate, frustration, and anger. Every time you're having to deal with that hurt, you're minimizing the loving entity that you are, giving the love and receiving love. You will stop giving the other person power over you because you're not able to give up anger and constant reflection over the past events. 11, you will now be giving better care to yourself physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Forgiveness is something you do for yourself. That person has done what he or she has done. You wish the best for them. Hopefully you can even preach to them. Hopefully you can convert it into something that's good for you and them. If you can't do that or accept it as just rely on Krishna, at least don't allow them to beat you and attack you and assault you and demoralize you and frustrate you and put you in gloom day after day as you carry them in your consciousness. And last, we want to follow the examples of our acharyas, how they forgave various offenders, which we are doing by the different stories that you're sharing, as we'll have you do every day. Now what we want to do is, we have two things I can do. Let's see, we got 40 minutes, 45 minutes. I think we better take some questions first before I do my last thing I want to do. The last thing is, we want to find that person who's hurt us, and we're all going to go and gang up on them. Okay? Whoever, we'll choose one of the people who hurt you, and each of us will come together and we'll attack that person, huh? We're going to love bomb them. I'll teach you how to do that. No, I'm not. All right. So there was some question, I think, on some of these. Rajiv, there was a question that we asked you to hold. Okay.
I shared that one of the ways that we can counteract revenge is to be able to get someone and to share with someone else what's going on, have some dialogue with someone. And I was thinking that oftentimes someone may want to have dialogue, but maybe the other person may not be receptive. So what do you do?
Could we hear? Sometimes this is the issue of revenge. And sometimes we want to have dialogue with someone, but the other person is not ready to go into dialogue. So what do you do in a situation like that? You're ready to have dialogue so that there can be some resolution, but the other person is not ready to. What do you feel?
Well, like in two countries which have war, sometimes other countries, diplomats, coming to interfere. So how is this being our life? One way is we willing to stick with this person, but he's not. Then I think one way would be to tell some of his good friends, but not in an artificial way, something nice about him or some good quality. So they will tell him how you were prizing them or something this way.
Okay, what he's saying is what now is beginning to happen in ISKCON and happens in many places in the world, where sometimes the conflict is of such a nature that both parties or one of the parties is not ready to interact. And so what do you do? Do you just hope and pray that it goes away? Maybe. You may try that. But other times there is a need for a third party, someone who can connect with both parties to try to see how to bring some type of alignment. And so this may help in some situations where what has happened is so intense that just by seeing the person, sometimes the energy, especially the passion, is so heavy that if people see each other, they'll just start fighting. Or they'll just go into the past and you did this, and what about this? But we all did this, and it goes nowhere. So there are times when just seeing that person's face, body, dehi, that it just puts one into trauma, the shock. Ah, I want to get you. And so it just keeps them separate, huh? And
but
work on it.
Yes.
So the devotee is now in ISKCON being trained to do this service for the whole society. And so when there's an issue, if you, another devotee, you authority, you and GBC or whoever it may be, that there's some facilitation now to be able to come in and to address these things. That is possible. Still with that, there still can be refusal. But this you've done for yourself. At least you've done your particular part. And Krishna knows that you've gone out of the way of good intention to try to help. Yes?
And even if the other person is dead, he can still do our part.
Yes, always. Even if the other person is there or not there, again, it's not to be selfish, but the idea is that you want to protect your creeper and you want to advance whatever is going on. So, for instance, in some cases, you might apologize to someone because of some level of incoherence, some issue. The other person may not apologize. The other person may not even accept your apology. But that's their problem. That's not yours. In the sense that you have cleared yourself and you have tried to act as a Vaishnava. And so this is not carrying into your psyche, interfering with your spirituality, your psycho or physiological set up, but the other person will be affected by it. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What to do if you see someone else being hurt and hurting others because that person may be unable to continue? What to do?
Always the best thing, number one, is that we try to show from our own example. Number two, that as we have our example, then we try somehow to reach out and to communicate. Usually the problem in communication and helping someone is that they really don't feel that we're really there for them or care about them or understand their issue. But if somebody really accepts that you are their well-wisher, they are that much more ready to listen to whatever you are trying to present them to help them. But if they're not that sure that you're really their well-wisher, then they will question or deny whatever offering that you might make. It's a lot easier when someone really considers that we are concerned about their highest well-being. Then that allows them to be that much more sensitive to whatever that we're trying to present. Yes. Mm-hmm. Self-confidence? Yes. I'll go a little more into that the day after tomorrow, which we didn't have time to do today, and looking at how we forgive ourselves. But just so we can carry that over to the 2 days from now, there is a huge difference between humility and low self-esteem. And often we confuse the two. Let me ask some of you, what are some of the ways to know the difference between low self-esteem and humility? Genuine Vaishnava humility versus low self-esteem. Mm-hmm. Malati. Mm-hmm. So she said one is positive and negative. Humility is, of course, positive. Low self-esteem is negative. That's one way to look at it.
Low self-esteem paralyzes you. So it victimizes you that you can't do anything about it. Whereas humility, you don't feel paralyzed. You honestly approach the situation and you make a solution.
Low self-esteem paralyzes. Humility identifies and allows you to make a solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very similar. One example made me very active. Mm-hmm. So one has low self-esteem, then cannot take any
issue. It's very similar. So humility, it gives you actually some empowerment to be more careful about doing what is necessary. And low self-esteem, it paralyzes you.
Someone who's humble has a great service attitude, and someone who's self-esteem may not have a service attitude.
Humble person has good service attitude. Low self-esteem, not. Also, low self-esteem has more to do with the harmonity with one's own egocentricity. What he or she cannot do, or is not able to arrange, or has lost control of. But humility has to do more in terms of service to Guru, to Krishna, to Sadhu. Feeling incompetent, but still keeping them as a sinner. So we want to have low self-esteem, where we minimize Krishna's ability to use us and to empower us. We want to have humility, where we feel that on our own, we're not able to accomplish, and therefore we're that much more eager to get help from sectors that are available. So real humility is a cry to be able to get the empowerment, and it's active to do. And low self-esteem is paralyzing in such a way. Any other question? Next few days, we'll take this last one. Mm-hmm. Yes, if something can act as a catalyst to help us be better communicators, better relationships, be better servants, better devotees, be more aware of how to avoid Maya, how to help other people out of Maya, then it's good. But if it's something that causes us to become paralyzed, then it's not good, in a sense. Okay, our last activity, and other questions you have we'll deal with in the coming days. And as you're reflecting, also, as a burning question, write it down, or some other type of reflection that comes to you that you would like us to discuss. We have the microphones next time. We'll be able to address some other issues a little better. Now, what we want to do now is we put that list together of how to see things differently, change hurt. All of these things here, we looked at ways how to change it, convert it. Where's that one? Keep on my numbers. When we forgive. All right. So we looked. We went when we forgive, we felt all of this. These wonderful, nice characteristics. When we are hurt, all of this stuff comes out. We're talking about changing the hurt, reasons why, but we do not forgive. When we looked at changing all of this into something that was positive. And so, just as we reflected on how to change something that is positive by seeing it a different way. Same thing happened, we're trying to see it in a different way. So now what we'd like you to do is especially that person in your number one category. It's on your paper and in your mind. We want you to do something very bold. I want you to be very humble. Humility is strength. Humility is being an activist, accepting Krishna's mercy. Thinking about the other person is much more than yourself. Being the servant of the servant. We want you, just for this last moments we have here, minutes, to think of that experience that happened to you. And we want you to share with us. You don't have to go deep into the actual dynamics of the people or the person who did this to you. But we want you to really go to the point of ways to solve problems. Where is that list? Melissa disappearing. To disassociate. What's on the other side? Oh, okay. Let's bring that here. Like the mad teacher who's putting paper everywhere. I don't know where it's at now. So we gave 6 steps to solve problems. And 3 of those was to be assertive, put yourself in someone else's shoes, and the other was to disassociate. So, let's look at this practical situation here, 4, 5, and 6 now. So what we want to do now is hone in on 5. We want you to go outside of your sari, your dhoti, your body, just for a moment now. It's still yours, but for now. But you go outside, we want you to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, in their body in this case. And we want you to consider how the other person, in their own way, own mind, could have perhaps justified the hurt that they gave you. Okay? Let me explain that again. We want you not to be you. Who are you? You have so many different bodies, so many different lifetimes, so many personalities are aggregate to produce the subtle and gross body you have now. So to move out of this one present gross and subtle body for a little while is not a big deal. You've been doing it the lifetimes and lifetimes. Sometimes you've been the receiver, sometimes you've been the giver. We forgive because we also want to be forgiven. We don't know how many Brahmins we've killed. We don't know how many people we've abused. We don't know how many kingdoms we've dismantled. How many kingdoms we've had. How many times we've been the Raj. How many times we've been this, we've been the Lord Brahma. How many times we have been attacked this way. How many times we've attacked. So many times. So this little time now, in this little life, we want you just to step out and to consider the person who did this hurt to you, that what they may have been thinking that allowed them to justify or consider that what they did was proper. Now that may be hard to do, especially if you're considering the person is all bad. You can't even think of stepping into somebody's shoes who's all bad. Or it can be very hard if you're thinking of revenge. And if you step out of your space, you can't be able to revenge this person sufficiently. So, we want to look at these wonderful qualities. Peacefulness, well-wisher, optimist, gratitude, self-improvement. It happens when we forgive. But what we're doing now is we're considering that person is also a devotee of Krishna. Even if they're an atheist. But they're just that much crazy, insane, in amnesia, or in pain. And so because they're sick, the person who hurt you is sick. Huh? Some kind of sickness is there. Now, we want to step out of being the receiver of that. And we want to consider possibly what that person could have been thinking that justified in their mind what their actions were. Alright? Doesn't mean you have to accept what they did or that it's okay, that the pain wasn't that bad. It wasn't such a serious issue. It was a serious issue. That's why you put it as your number one. But we want to look now at perhaps what that person could have been thinking that caused them to do that, or what they could have been thinking that caused them to justify or feel that what they did wasn't so bad. Okay, and as you've stepped out of your shoes and you put on their shoes, ooh, that you're going to share with us what perhaps that person could have been thinking that allowed them to act in the way that they did. Now by doing this, we're trying to access more Krishna. We're trying to enter deeper into some of the stories of the acharyas and others that you're sharing. Today we talked about the Avanti Brahmana, and we talked about Mr. Koresh and Mahapurana yesterday, and Vishnu himself. And we saw how that these things kept happening. Overlooked the bad, saw the good, not resentful, took responsibility, accepted the fate, relied on Krishna, the well-wisher, etc. And these will keep coming forth as we look at the lives of the unalloyed devotees of the Lord. So here's someone who is struggling with something. They justified in some way, they're dealing with some kind of pain, some sort of dysfunctionalism that has produced what was then projected onto you. Now you want to step out of being who you are, and you want to step and make a turn, and you're trying to see through their eyes just for a moment. So who can be first? Please come. This is not an easy assignment, and we don't expect it to be easy. We're talking about real transformation. So we want to, in these few days that this course is over, we want to have at least 98% of you to drop some serious karma. So that when you leave this course and you go on to the rest of the festival, that there's major transformation has happened where you can be able to imbibe deeper what you read, what you experience, and what Prabhupada is making available for all of us. Please. What you can do is you can summarize very briefly what it's about, and then you can explain what that person perhaps could have been perceiving to justify what they did.
Okay, so the situation is like that. It's a war in my country. So my husband and me, we are called to a neighboring country to be taking shelter from our country to that country. So we arrived. They asked us a very good man. What's interesting question is that. We just arrived and they're asking us a very good man. So the next things are moving quite fast, and all of a sudden, just because I make some remark about what they're doing there, we have to leave the temple. And we have no money, we have nowhere to go. We have to go. Which is nothing to think. Okay, so stepping out from that situation, and stepping out to the position of the manager who is deciding up.
No, go, Paul, bring me the Kleenex.
I can see that person is a big anxiety, they're facing a lot of trouble managing the place, they're facing serious miscommunication in many fields. So they're facing big trouble dealing with people generally. So what they're thinking, what we really don't want is more trouble. And you newcomers, we have enough trouble dealing with what we already have, so we can't take you. You have too much trouble. So the best thing for us, we just disappear. So that's for us to, you know, for them it's easy, you know, because, you know, okay, for me, I am them. For me it's easy because I deal with you, I just don't want to deal with you. So I just ignore you, you don't exist, you please leave, so leave me alone to deal with my trouble. Right. That's one thing, shall I say one more?
Okay. There's another aspect you have also? Okay.
So the same issue?
No, this is good. No, this is you're finished. This is nice now. So what she's done, she's looked at a particular issue, something has happened, very painful. She's trying to consider how possibly the other person could have been thinking. That what they did, we're not saying that it was right. Matter of fact, the pain is there, and she's seeing that it was improper. But she's just trying to consider what that person may have been thinking to cause them to say what they did. Okay, thank you very much. The next person, thank you. Yes, please.
It is just by Krishna's mercy that I came to today here to this class, because, well, I had an appointment with Juan Maharaj, and when I went to his room, there was a big sign saying, "Please do not disturb." So okay, I said okay, and there was a chair next to the sign, and I just sat down and I kind of started chanting Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then, like after maybe two rounds or so, his secretary came from a next room or something like that, and he came. "Do not chant," he told me. "Do not chant here. What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I'm just chanting." He told me, "Not chant here. Just go somewhere else." And okay, I could be silent here. "No, just go. And I was like, all the things you hear in Krishna consciousness were happening in my mind. "Oh, yes, maybe he's doing his service." But I was feeling angry still, you know. I wanted to scream and just go back on him. And then I got disturbed for maybe 10, 15 minutes, and I just sat down. I stayed on the chair silent, just kind of grumpy, and I didn't want to forgive. But now, then you explain the one, put yourself in the other person's shoes, and I start thinking, well, he's trying to do his service to his Guru Maharaj, he's thinking that his Guru Maharaj requires rest to do his big time service, and I'm just like in between that service. I could be sensitive to his service, and I could just move around and allow him to do service in an easier way, rather than being a stumbling block in his service, rather than being in between. He just told me, he was not necessarily aggressive, but he was direct. "Please do not chant here, go somewhere else." But I felt it aggressive because it was against my wishes, but it was just simple, straightforward language. If I just had acknowledged his position as servant, I would just have moved around with no hurt feelings. Just come back later, maybe after a class with Bhaktivedanta Swami, so I could cool down my system.
So again, a genuine situation. He was invited to come. He came. There wasn't contact at first. He's peacefully waiting, chanting the holy name, and he gets assaulted. What he considers. And so there are many ways how he could have processed this. He could be holding some heavy anger and thinking, "Oh, this Maharaj and also his servants, you know, I'm marking them. They are ridiculous." And every time he sees him, he thinks, "Yes, this is a Maharaj who makes promises that he's ridiculous. He's probably in there listening to a radio." So, and carry that with him. Or he can look at it in the sense of thinking, what are the other possibilities? And try to consider possibilities that are not just speculation, but genuine possibilities. So that he can look in a more wholesome way about this and deal with his own self and stability. Someone else? Mm-hmm.
This is about when I was 19 to 7 years ago. that I was giving my Kurdistan course. My father wanted me to get some experience working outside, so he said I should go out and work, and then I started meeting tuitions, and I had to meet my student's father, who was my father's age, and then we got family close like that. You know, his wife was my auntie. You know, India we call everybody uncle and auntie, and everything. You know, we get immediately into relationships. So the wife was the auntie, and this man was my uncle, and his kids were calling me elder sister, and it was going on. And then this person asked me if I want to work as his personal secretary in the office. And then I said, oh, because as Maharaj was saying, that many of us don't like change, and I'm that person, I don't like change. And I said, no, I don't want it. But then my father was thinking, you know, it's a good experience that you go out.
I'm going to address, not tomorrow, but the next day, in some areas where we find that we can't forgive the person. And, you know, we are talking about systems and ways to deal with this. But there's some cases where a situation is such an assault to our innocence, to our naivety, to our simplicity, to our purity, and we just feel that how can someone, you know, do such? And sometimes we even consider how can Krishna even allow such, you know, to happen to us in such ways. And literally, millions of people are actually dealing with the same thing. It's not something that is rare, as many people would like to think that it is. As I was saying, that worldwide, something like 1/4 of girls have been molested in different ways, and almost 1/3 in many countries. In some places, 1/4 of boys. And a lot of the hurt that has come on us has been hurt from people who supposedly were to protect us, to provide for us, to be there for us when we needed them, but somehow they were not. But that's a deeper level. We'll go on that and see 2 days from now. So we'll follow that one to try to put yourself in that person's position, someone who's done something that's so heinous that the pain is there with you, and even to put yourself in that person's position can give you seemingly even more pain. So we will deal with that particular category. Someone else like to share a situation where experiences happen and they can try to put themselves in the other person's shoes to try to perceive why and how that person may have felt and acted in that way. What we'll find in these cases, and I'm sure there's, you know, at least 10, 15 of you who probably have something similar to what she's actually saying, is that there is a fact that to the degree that someone is dysfunctional in their own consciousness, and sometimes to the degree that person is dealing with some serious issues of pain in their own lives, they can be that much obnoxious. It's not an accident. We study many of the people who are just chronic abusers, and you look and you see what's happened in their life, and it's very serious. And that's one of the reasons we're doing this kind of course, because for some of us who have had great emotional hurt, that hurt is so ingrained in our consciousness, we will project that on somebody else. The thing that we least want to see happen is that we'll find ourselves so much having that as a meditation, that instead of it not happening, because it's so much of our internal dialogue, we will produce just what we don't want to happen. Just how we don't want to have our children treated because of how we were treated. In some cases, because we haven't been able to release it, we haven't been able to process it. Just what we don't want to happen to our kids, we will do the exact same thing to our children. This is the nature of what affects the subtle body, when these things are actually so ingrained and we carry them around. If I'm carrying something, say I'm carrying these cartels, so whether I'm in this room or the upstairs, downstairs, or at the temple, I still got this on me. And it's going to be a part of what I bring into the environment. And so there's certain things that we carry with us that's become a part of us unconsciously, and we really want to name it, face it, feel it, and be able to release it. And some of you are going to do that in this course. You're going to be able to release some of that stuff. Send it back. Because Krishna will deal, you know, with such people. But we don't want to have them attacking us again and again and again from day to day as we reflect on such things. Anyone else would like to share? Yes, please.
Her is so far away. How can I do all of these feelings? So in 2 or 3 or 4 days, I begin to think, what is the message I'm starting to go? And it's wonderful. And so I get through it. And not even 2 months, I'm telling my mother that I'm going to marry her. And I'm saying, I remember he said to me, oh, wonderful, I'll send you presents from India. And so I have to call my mother and tell her. She watches the news 2 times a day, and she thinks everything is in the Middle East. And she doesn't have a... And so all of a sudden, I was in those shoes. But it came out good.
Okay. And you're here now? All right. Okay. See, sometimes we try to go out of our body, our shoes, somebody else's shoes, we still may come up with full disagreement about what the person did. But in majority of cases, it can help us to be less disturbed because we can understand how they justified, even though we still don't accept, but we can understand how they justified, how they were thinking, and so it can allow us to feel less of just a victim only in such ways. Or sometimes by disassociating. That we just look on that situation, put ourselves outside of it. Maybe we have time for one more. One more person would like to share? Yes, please. Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, when we study it and put ourselves in that situation, we may even disagree even more. But still, we'll have more variables to be a well-wisher or to make ourselves whole. Okay.
It was really like that in my own life. When I was like 7 or 8 years old, my father left his body. I had a crucial time. They're not that rich, middle class people. And see, my father actually had 2 wives. First one had 3 children, 2 sisters, 1 son, and 1 brother. And then my mother had 2 brothers, 1 sister, so there were 6. Anyway, when he died, I was the eldest of my mother. And ever since, after he departed, that the whole thing, all of us only 8 years old, my mother only looked at me for what we call future generation or whatever it is. Although my elder brother was 25, already had 2 children. Anyway, we are running our life. And then, what happened? Although my brother, he was a doctor. My father was a doctor also. And then my brother ran from my father. Then he was running his life, earning money through the medicine and everything. Then he was living his life okay. Wasn't it? His side, they only had the most amount of land and only a few cows and just enough for maybe a few that we passed for. But then my brother was kind of, I don't know how he got that mentality. Although my father told him that actually, because I lose my body, don't try to take your share of land or whatever. I gave you my knowledge of what you call being a doctor. Then besides everything, he agreed in it. I was not told by my father this thing, but someone else told me about that. Anyway, then
at the time it was, you know, and just really, I just wanted to take a share of land. I had nothing to do. I was just 28 years old. My mother was very kind-hearted. And I think God is going to share. And I was thinking, how that actually makes sense? You're so devoted to my father. You're so devoted to our father. But how could he be like this now? I just couldn't give it to him until today. And then, now what we call, just my first point of frustrated mind. I'm still disturbed by that act, how he did on us. Now, the thing that we see on the other side, how my brother actually acted. He had his knowledge, actually, he had more land. All the land supposed to be coming to us. He had his house. He only had his, only thing he had is the knowledge of being a doctor, homeopathic doctor, and the medicines that my father had, he got them. But he also, I mean, enough, just more than enough to, what you call, to run his life and run his family to see them and why. He really wanted to, what you call, this, to see from that point. He also wanted to have some land, so that he could grow something like that. It would take too long to earn money step by step and buy some land and so that he would just like grab some. And see the pictures and opportunities of not having a strong holder of the man on our side. Yes.
Okay. So a short story, 5 minutes, and then we're going to adjourn, huh? But in the next day, try to look a little closer at the papers that we gave you. Reflect on reasons why we don't want to forgive, what forgiveness is not, and what forgiveness is. And reflect on the 12 steps we give you there to access forgiveness. These issues here, ways to solve problems. Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, assertiveness, putting yourself in someone else's shoes, disassociating. We'll do a little more with this, especially our last day. If according to how things develop in the conversations, in the last day we may literally take you out of your body, we'll see. Anyway, we'll save that. We went over some of these things we mentioned earlier about emotional hurt. In all of this list of heavy things, which you've reflected on, we looked in the contrast of that, of when we do forgive, that we have so many things that are connected with being a sadhu. Relief, peacefulness, well-wisher, optimistic, gratitude, self-improvement, and loving, and we go on and on. What we're trying to do now is we look at putting yourself in other people's shoes. We're also considering changing the hurt. Ways that these things are there, but how it can be catalyst for something that's positive. Our reasons for not forgiving. We talked about some of the acharyas and the pastimes. We tried to look at some of the areas that they access, which helped them in the science of forgiving. Now I just want to end with a story which will help you also thinking more about your own stories. We look deeper at some of those areas where we really haven't been able to forgive. Now, Bhagavatam explains how the son takes many of the qualities of the mother, the daughter takes some of the central qualities of the father. So there was a lack of presence of the father. Although I had a father, my father recently died a few years ago. My mother died 2 years ago also, after my father. I had a very unusual father. He died at the age of 93. He was very healthy his whole life until maybe 6 months before he died. He was still doing everything himself. I lived in poverty. My father was very rich. I'm the youngest in my family of six, and so this is why I'm spoiled. I have mostly sisters and one brother. So we had a very interesting life. My mother basically had to do everything for us. My father somehow always convinced us, somehow in the background, because we rarely saw him, but he convinced us that he was saving all of his money so that he would facilitate us later in our lives. And so he said he was saving for us to go to university, to buy property for us, this or that. But it was a big lie. We never once heard our father say that he loved us. We never once really saw any, what you would call, serious affection from father. Nor did he live with us. He arranged for us to have a house in the ghetto while he had his houses in upper class areas. When we came to visit him, he would make us put our clothes in the closet on the bathroom and put on other clothes so that we wouldn't contaminate his houses. So we grew up in this kind of arrangement. And if we ever get mad at my mother or at one of us or whatever, he would say he's going to take away the ghetto house he's given us, a little bit of what we had. So we grew up considering this man is a very harsh man. My father was very paranoid. He carried guns all the time. In America, guns is a very common thing. But he particularly packed a gun. He always had thousands of dollars even on his pocket. He had at least maybe eight bank accounts because he didn't trust anybody, he didn't trust any bank. And people would steal from him because he kept money and boxes of money under his bed even. So he was a very paranoid person, was a Scrooge. He collected things, held on to things, and gave almost nothing away. So I grew up basically considering that I didn't have a father. Even as a devotee, you know, there was very little interaction. However, before my father passed, I had an interesting conversation with him. I should actually say with my mother. Yes. And what I found out is how much my father himself was in pain. So he was just acting upon the pain that he was carrying himself. He grew up in a family where everyone was seen as a high achiever. But somehow he was told by his mother and his father that he was a failure, would always be a failure. For some reason, they singled him out. See, part of my family is Italian, part American Indian, and part from Afro descent. So he was a dark person. Everyone else was very, very light, almost European in color. So he was singled out that he was the black sheep, would never be of any success, any value. So he grew up in this mood that he was going to show that he was successful. But his concept of success was to make as much money, acquire as much facility, and just hold on to it. Just sit on to it. So really, what he was projecting on us, which was very painful, and even today, most of my brothers and sisters probably have not forgiven him. But the issue was that he was as obnoxious and harsh because he was so much suffering himself. He was a person who wanted respect, but didn't know how to get it. He wanted to be important, and in the process, he turned everybody off. He did exactly, in one sense, what he was told that he was going to be. He was trying to be successful, in one sense, but in the process, he wasn't successful because, in one sense, because he didn't really have any friends. So, if I only was seeing it from my father's actions. I would hate him and would probably imbibe some of his negative qualities. Because of being so disturbed about what he did or what he didn't do, and carrying that so much in my consciousness, I would project some of that on people who I should be giving the help or the care to, or who I should be facilitating, or who I should be trying to love and serve. So by being able to try to see through the eyes of how my father himself was treated and how he was seeing things, then I could allow myself to separate from the karma and the consciousness of that, so that I could be more whole, and also could be able in one way to help him, because by also being fragmented, he is karmically going to suffer more because he produces a son who's fragmented in such a way. So the best way to try to help my father, and also to see that I don't carry this, because I'm a sannyasa, so it's a little easier, I'm not marrying, but so that that would not enter into tradition or to family life and become a legacy of such. So many times, the people who have disappointed us, who have pained us, if we're able to look a little closer, if we had the ability to look at their lives, this life or sometimes even the previous life, we'll be able to see that that person is in tremendous dysfunctionalism, pain, or whatever, and the way that they have acted is a part of the dysfunctional incoherence that's going on within their own consciousness. We want to look at the past, learn from it. I'm sorry, we want to learn from the past while we look toward the future. So in so many of our cases, we've had all kinds of things, especially stuff with those who are closest to us. Our parents, sometimes our guru, or our advisor, or our instructors, or some of our caretakers. And those relationships can be the most painful, because those relationships we expect the most from. Those relationships we are more in need. And when the facilitation isn't there, then that produces a crossroads. Do we allow that to carry on in our consciousness, to assault us, to make us less of a person? Or do we use such to become a better person? Do we use such and not thinking how to avoid it where it happens, but we use it to separate ourselves from it, to disassociate, put ourselves in someone else's shoes, where we can constantly be able to have these kind of qualities: relief, peacefulness, well-wishing, qualities of love, qualities of a sadhu. So we have to keep trying to revisit. Are we really ready to be sadhus? If we're ready to be sadhus, we have to be more and more ready to rise above anybody's duality, as well as our own. And to the degree that we are playing in and accepting the duality, then it means another body. It means we have to take other bodies to be able to experience various polarities, to work out other things where sometimes we are the abused and sometimes we are the abuser. Sometimes we are the ones who are projecting some hurt on someone. Sometimes we are the receivers. And that samsara and that cycle can go on and on and on until one day we're ready to really to step out of it and try to see how to say yes to Krishna regardless to whatever is going on in the environment. It doesn't mean denial. It doesn't mean that we're putting ourselves in a position to be hurt over and over again. It doesn't mean that we're saying that what the person did wasn't so bad. What my father did was very bad, because he hurt himself so much that my father wore the same suit for 25 years. Same pair of shoes for 40 years. So he had all this wealth and wouldn't even take care of himself. So he hurt himself in so many ways, as well as he hurt others. And so one can just be angry at him in terms of the hurt or what he didn't do. But one can also look at how much this person was suffering due to others who made him suffer, and he carried it with him. So that means he never really forgave his own parents. Because he never forgave them, he acted in such a way that proved that they were right, or he carried that pain and those wounds, and instead of helping others, he wounded them in such ways. So in your own cases, you can also do some mental reflection. Not that you're trying to forget, not that you're justifying what someone has done, but understanding how karma is very awesome, and understanding that our situations are somehow for us to use to become a better person, more of a sadhu. So tomorrow we won't be together, and the next day we'll have a chance to look at our papers a little closer. The stories that you have to research, make sure that you have those in the mind, that you're praying to these personalities, and we'll come together in a way that we can all try to grow from these experiences, and then we can help especially some of us who are more stuck and not able to rise above some of the pain that's been affecting us for years and sometimes for lifetimes. It's come from the child of Sri Prabhupada ki, Vaishnava Thakur ki. Hare Krishna.